Welcome to the Crunch.
Sorry, Jess.
Latest episode. We obviously have Ross Hunter back in the studio with us, which is
obviously. I'm honoured that you say that, Jess.
Who else would be just throwing bombs out there that I'm going to have to edit out?
Come on, you love it.
Welcome back, Ross Hunter, the Golden Gavel. We haven't had that for a while. And we also have Mark Grogan with us in the studio. Welcome back, Mark.
Thank you. Good to see you.
Third time on the Crunch. Second time.
See, if I'm the Golden Gavel, Mark has to be Mr. Innovative Video.
He's the Golden Gab.
Yeah.
Look, it's born out of necessity. Sometimes there's nothing exciting to say about the property, so we have to get, you know, we have to find a different angle. We have to find.
It's like the signboard. The best angle of the house often is not the front of the house.
Correct.
So you go down the backyard.
Or dig a hole and find it down there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You guys probably know we do some training with West Coast Property Training.
Yeah.
We use Mark's videos at a lot of, as some of our examples.
Yeah.
And I had some very heated conversations and debates with agents who believed that some of your videos were almost illegal.
Really?
I would say the one where you throw, and if anyone hasn't seen it, it's a knockdown property, I'd say, and Mark spreads some fuel, in inverted commas, around the house and then blows it up at the end.
Yeah.
And the agents were strongly of the opinion that that was should not have been done.
I wouldn't trust a real estate agent with a legal opinion, but I would certainly say that if anyone's ever used the term renovate or detonate, which I'm sure they have, because let's face it, we don't dig too deep when we're looking for creativity in this industry. Well, is that illegal as well? You know, that's what we've got to ask the question of all of these legal eagles in the industry.
Just like that errs on the perfect marketing campaign, because marketing is about controversy.
It's about
creating conversation. If it's benign and vanilla and sort of follows the narrow road of what people think you should do, then it's boring. You see, you do that. The fact that it created a debate means it worked.
And Absolutely. The property sold for 10% over the asking price. The owner was elated.
Was thrilled.
Well, there you go.
And let's face it, now everyone's happy.
Beautiful. Yeah. We love it. That brings me to my first thing that I wanted to chat to you guys about, which is marketing and the marketing approaches being taken by agents in Perth at the moment.
Mm.
Particularly, I want to talk about Matterport, because Mark, you've recently added that to your repertoire. Given the market, and we just off air were talking about a lot of East Coast buyers in the market,
mm-hmm.
something that's unavoidable to talk about. Have your marketing approaches changed because of that? Mark, I know yours has, so I want to speak to you on that. And then Ross, I would like to know what the conversation is that's happening in your office about that. Mark, do you want to kick us off with that?
Yeah, look, we do a video walkthrough just on the phone for every single property, especially if it's if it's an investor style property. So we give it a good 10 minutes of walkthrough with commentary.
Is that something that's going up on REA, or is that sent out?
I will keep that as a private YouTube link, and I'll send that out to people as they're requesting it.
Yep.
I don't think it's necessary to put it on realestate.com.
Yep.
I think it's just a suitable thing for once you've had a conversation with a buyer.
Mm-hmm.
Realestate.com is there to gain the interest to start with. It doesn't need to do the full job of selling it. That's what we're there for. So I send that video out with the commentary, and I'll pick up on all the good and bad bits as we go, so that the buyer has a real understanding. And I think that's one of the conversations I've had with a number of the buyers from the East Coast, is that they're making a decision based on a handful of photos or a one-minute walkthrough, which just doesn't sell it.
Mm-hmm.
They're also then going, oh, I've got to get my property manager to come through. They're having to spend a heap of money on getting their property manager to go through in some cases, because they are charging for those appointments in a lot of the situations, unless they are guaranteed a listing out of it. So giving them that walkthrough, and then their property manager often even having a look at it that way, is making a big difference, and it's helping the decisions to be made quicker in that way. But I think Matterport doesn't sugarcoat.
Yes.
And that's another reason they appreciate Matterport. So
okay.
I do both now.
Are you putting the Matterport on REA? Because that is a number one feedback I get from agents who don't want to use Matterport, is not shows too much. And I've seen some of the properties you're sending Matterport through, and they're not glamorous, a lot of them. Some of them are not even tidy.
No.
So
no.
Is that going on realestate.com?
No, I don't put it up. No. I'll put it occasionally. I've put Matterport on. If the home presents well enough, I'd maybe put the Matterport on then.
Yep.
But it's really after the conversation, and if you've got a buyer who's on the fence, or even local buyers who go, I've got a whole life to live. I don't want to go and see that house at that time on that day. I've got sports, I've got everything else.
Mm-hmm.
So giving them that information on the Matterport, lets them make a decision as to whether or not it's worth them even spending their time to come out and see that one. And a lot of them, I think because there's – and it's not that they're going, oh, I'm not interested in buying a property. They're desperate to get one in many cases. But what they're saying is that I'm not going to waste my time going again, missing out again and going through that whole heartache. So with Matterport, they're able to make a pretty solid decision. And if they're coming to see the property in person, a lot of the time that's really – they've established that this is – they're going to make an offer. Mm-hmm. They're just coming to physically see it before they do so.
You're qualifying them before they come.
As much as you can, yeah, yeah.
And again, a lot of agents will say, I don't want to qualify them before they come. I want them to come through the door so that I can have a conversation with them.
Sure.
So are these buyers that are on your database already that you're – I would say – in your patch, you're probably familiar with a lot of the people that are looking,
yeah.
They're coming, they're missing out, they're, you know.
We do want them there. I operate a little differently from some in our local area. I do everything by appointment as much as possible. I mm-hmm. do maybe a couple of home opens in a month. A home open would only be really if we're perhaps not getting the right response from the market. We go, well, before we make any adjustments to price, let's suss it out. Let's see mm-hmm. whether or not it's really just going to be a case of let's do a home open and see what sort of response we get. When we're doing it by appointment, if I can get them there in person before we send a Matterport or whatever, then yes, that's my preference. Mm-hmm. But agents who say I want to have people a conversation with people, I would assume at this point in the market, you're probably not having too many meaningful conversations at a home open other than what's your name, what's your phone number, have a look, here's a brochure.
Yeah.
You can't have too many meaningful conversations when there's 40 people walking through in 40 minutes.
Yeah.
So I think that the Matterport has its place in that role, but it's predominantly on the properties where we know that it's likely to attract a lot of investor attention.
Yeah.
Roscoe? Yeah, look, it's a really good point. And, you know, what Mark does, I think it's covering all the layers that we need to cover now. I think the consumer, like, I think consumer expectation over so many levels has changed as well of how we present a property.
Yeah.
And I guess one of the things is to try and cut through and to be as authentic as possible in what we're actually offering to the marketplace because, you know, we know how many times, like we do it, like I was looking on Google reviews the other day at a hotel we're potentially staying at when we go away in July. And, you know, we all tend to look at the reviews and so forth. And one hotel I was thinking about going to, but I dismissed it because some of the reviews say the photos didn't match what we got.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Now, I made a decision based on pretty much that comment.
Mm.
And I think our industry has been sort of a victim of that as well. So I think by doing what Mark's talking about really shows the level of authenticity mm-hmm. and it dives into all the layers of the property of every angle that you possibly can because at the end of the day, Jess, it is what it is. Don't sugarcoat it. Represent it what it is. And it's like, you know, I've always had a bit of an issue around twilight photos.
Mm-hmm.
You know, having the driveway that's squirted with the hose and the twilight photos and all the rest of it, like, you know, it just sometimes I go, really? You know, just show the property as it is. Not it doesn't always represent what's behind the front door. And mm-hmm. I think it's really important at the moment that we as an industry just really drive hard for that level of authenticity of what we're offering. I think people respect that.
Yeah.
They really do.
They do.
So then coming back to the marketing question at the moment, again, we were just talking off air about East Coast investors, what is the conversation in your office with your reps about the type of marketing that they're offering? Has that changed in the last year?
Look, probably, I mean, some of the things, certainly with, like Mark was saying, with you know, things like FaceTime and using mobile phones to get people through the property mm-hmm. in a virtual sense tends to work really well, which once again is that is something that was driven by COVID that I think has become a bit of a new norm, which is fine. It's COVID had some benefits. But I think one of the key things, Jess, is that we're doing is to try and take an attitude as well. Digital is not everything.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. You know, and I think the industry has gone so one way in relation. It's all about digital. And we're driving hard to say, yeah, that's part of how we present a property, but what other mediums are available to get the property into certain marketplaces? Because my whole thing around digital, you know, your realestate.coms and so forth, as powerful as they are, there's one flaw that they have, in my opinion. Let's say I'm like we're sitting in your offices in Subiaco. Let's say I'm looking for a property in Subiaco. I have to go onto the internet and type in Subiaco, and up it comes. But let's say we've got an equally beautiful home in Mount Hawthorne.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not going to see that necessarily because I'm not searching Mount Hawthorne. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's still quite one-dimensional like that. Mm-hmm. Yes, I know it can. It's got algorithms to do. It has all sorts of things. But the thing is still where I believe and we're pushing hard certainly in our business is where print media can sort of, you know, pulling the out-of-area buyer, pulling the passive buyer mm-hmm. is by exposing the property. A property in Subiaco could be next to a property in Mandurah. People go, oh, and what's that property? Never thought about that. Oh. And I think that's really important as well, mm-hmm. is that we're demonstrating to the sellers that we are covering every possible base. And like you look at things like Sydney, for example. Sydney for us in particular from an Australia-wide sort of market is probably where we get the strongest inquiry outside of WA. So how do you get into the Sydney market? And there are a few different ways to sort of expose your property in that Sydney market mm-hmm. That we're conscious of. But the other thing, just to your point, outside of marketing, which actually is part of marketing, is about preparation. You know, it's one of the things I think often happens is there's this panic to get the property on the market.
Yes.
You know, oh, I've got to get on the market. I've got to launch it today. I've got to get on the market. And, you know, we all know in life one of the greatest things, attributes we can all have is the three P's, preparation, preparation, preparation. Mm. It's so important.
Yeah.
And I think with launching property at the moment, the preparation is really, really important. Mm-hmm. Because, yes, there is still a lack of supply in the market. Well, capitalise on it.
Yeah.
Prepare your property as good as you can 100%. In all respects
yes.
to actually get the best possible result. Don't yeah. rush it. Like the market's not going to change tomorrow.
Yeah.
Everybody's saying, oh, it's going to change. We're going to get on there. Just hold five. Take as an agent, take control. Lead at this point, at this juncture, the seller needs you to be a leader more than it needs you to be a real estate agent mm-hmm. or a salesperson. You know, and you've got to lead them through the journey.
We shot a property yesterday and our head photographer came in this morning and said, I was in this property and it was absolutely beautiful house. And I looked at the photos and I went, oh, really? And it was the style, it wasn't styled.
Mm.
And wasn't presented well. And no. So the home in a photo, it's hard to see how a property feels when the styling or the lack of styling, whatever it is so blatantly obvious.
Yeah.
And in a multi-million dollar property, you kind of expect a higher level.
And it is a premium market to be getting a maximum price. But
yes.
You can't just get that maximum price no. simply because you've got a for sale sign.
No.
You need to make sure that everything, yes, it's a premium time to sell, but if you present it in the best possible way, then you are going to get an absolutely fantastic result rather than just a result.
Yeah.
And a result is almost guaranteed in this market just by it being on the market.
Mm-hmm.
3 years ago, that wasn't the case.
Absolutely.
But now it's for sale, it's going to sell. But are you going to get that maximum price? And I think it is worth taking the time to prepare it. There are certain properties where it's literally, for whatever reasons behind the seller or the tenant's life or whatever's going on,
exactly.
You've got to work with what you've got to work with. Yeah. You can give your best advice as an agent. And I think it's really important to make sure that you have explained to a seller
mm-hmm.
that, I mean, I've had situations as rough as this market is, and I'm sure that, you know, that this, you'd come under fire for saying it, but hey, it's a podcast. let's be controversial, Ross.
Yeah.
But, you know, I have said to people, my strongest advice to you is you sell this property vacant.
Yes.
That tenant is going to cost you a fortune when you go to sell this property. And so if it takes 3 months for you to safely and comfortably relocate them and give them time to find something suitable, it's worth you waiting.
Yeah.
Now, there are times where they go, no, I just want to get it on. Great, no worries. Let's do it. We can make that happen. We can work with whatever we have to work with here. But there are other situations where they've taken that advice and it's worth tens of thousands to them in some cases. So as an agent, you have a real responsibility to make the best recommendation as to what's going to get the result rather than just signing the listing up straight away.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good point, because the other thing too is because, you know, 99% of people looking to buy are looking to buy to move in.
Mm.
Because of the rental market being what it is, they can't rent, they'll buy. But if the property's got 6 months or 8 months left of the lease, they just go, we love the home, but we can't buy it because we can't move in.
Yeah.
We've got nowhere to live.
Yeah.
So it's actually a real deterrent. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that leads me to my next discussion point that I want to chat with you guys about, which is investors versus owner-occupier buyers.
Mm.
Now, you've just said that 99% of the market are people looking to move in.
Yeah, look. Yeah, it's a big part of the market because it's simply it's supply demand in the whole, yes. You know, the old war horse that everyone's spoken well, you know, enough about. But at the end of the day, like I was saying to Mark before when we talk about it, the issue is there are investors out there looking. There's still plenty of investors looking, and the interest rate thing is sort of not really deterring them because, mm-hmm. you know, there's still growth there and so forth. But investors want to buy well mm-hmm. still. The problem is they have, no, let's call it, the investors want to buy wholesale. At the moment, they still have to pay retail
yeah.
because of the demand of all the people need to buy properties to go and live in. So they're there, and, yes, there are some properties being bought by investors, but certainly not the rate we saw, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago, simply because the lack of stock out in the marketplace.
So yeah. Tell me, now, both of you guys work in very different markets, right?
Mm.
Ross, you're obviously not Golden Triangle, but you guys are Western Suburbs.
I thought you were going to say I'm the Golden Boy.
That goes without saying. Western Suburbs predominantly, the office is based in Claremont yeah. and your agents predominantly service that area.
Yeah.
Mark, you are Kelmscott and surrounds or your
– We'll go with the Kelmscott and the hills.
Yeah. And the hills. Mark is the Golden Triangle Martin, of the hills, yeah. right? Martin, let's not drop these, right?
Et cetera. So two very different markets.
Yeah.
When we're talking about investors, you've got your East Coast investors and then your Perth local investors.
Yeah.
I would assume the market in Perth for when you say investors want to buy wholesale versus retail,
mm.
this is kind of wholesale prices for East Coast investors
mm.
almost.
Mm.
I know it's
yeah.
market related, but mm. versus a Perth investor who it's certainly not. So how, what's the difference there?
I think Mark's market is probably a lot more primed for the East Coast people to buy mm-hmm. than our market. But if you look at the Western suburbs in particular, forget the state of the market. Generally, as a rental market, it's very, very small anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 90+% of properties owned in the Western suburbs are lived in by owner-occupiers
mm-hmm.
in any market. So it's never a big rental market regardless. You start to push out into sort of like areas we delve into, you know, your Double Views, your Scarboroughs, your Loos, very different sort of story. But Western Suburbs, pure, it's a low rental market regardless. I know a lot of the properties that we do manage in those areas, the owners are living overseas. They've been transferred to different places around the world there, and then they come back.
Yeah, that's
you know, so it's an investment by default, if you like.
Sure.
Yes, we do have a lot of inquiry from the eastern states and so forth. But it's probably at a different level, I think, to what Mark would experience out there. I saw a TV program, Mark, you may be aware of it, some months ago, where there was people from the eastern states, there was a company chaperoning these people. If like they were on a bus, they all had the same T-shirt on and whatever. And they were on this bus driving around properties. It was around, you know.
It's like the new Amway kind of vibe with those buses. Hey,
are
like
you aware of what I'm talking about? I've heard of them.
Yeah. I've heard of them getting around.
But that's the market they were going into, the Kelmscotts, the Gosnells and so forth. Yeah.
And likewise, I'm sure there was a busload of people from Perth up in Brisbane, and there's probably a busload. They always go to a different state
because
the other state is the magic state. Yes, that's right. Yeah.
So, how are you finding things, Mark, in that regard?
Oh, look, it is still really, really strong. I mean, the investment inquiry is massive. Mm-hmm. Before I launch any property at the moment, almost every case we're going through and doing that video walkthrough as well as having Matterport ready. And when the inquiries start coming through, it'll be straight away they want the rental estimate. So we've got the rental appraisal all ready to go for everybody.
What percentage is that East Coast versus local, would you say?
Look, I'm gonna guess at it because I'm not a stat guy. But I would say probably 70% interstate.
Mm. Wow.
Easily 70%. Yeah. That's conservative. Okay. And they're on it fast. Like that is just an amazing thing. I can list a property, you know, say the day kind of gets away from you and it might be, you know, 9 o'clock at night when you hit go on that listing. By the time you get up in the morning, there's 15 inquiries and they're all interstate.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of missed calls because they don't know about the time difference. We know the time difference going that way. They don't know the time difference coming this way. So, yeah, so that's
another factor. I had a phone call at 5 a.m. this morning from over east.
Yep.
Tell me.
Yep. I had one at 3:30 from somebody who was like, oh, I'm an early kind of guy. I'm like, yeah, that is early. Yeah, that is real proper early.
You get up at that time though, don't you?
Not every time. certainly not ready to take phone calls at that point in the day.
I actually caught up with your property manager at O'Neill the other day. who is brilliant and so knowledgeable, and you guys have a huge rent roll there. Mm. And her, we were talking about obviously changes to Tenancy Act and that kind of had the impacts of that. And she was saying that a lot of your landlords are kind of maybe moving, actually getting out of, the, like moving their stock. So has that been something that...
Look, we've seen a bit of that for sure. Yeah. I think a lot of it is that the, and that most of those are the locals.
Yeah.
The interstate sellers, there's been very few in my experience with that.
Yeah.
It's locals who got absolutely hammered when prices dropped from about 2016 through to the start of COVID, really. Mm-hmm. And they're finally going, oh, we can sell for what we owe. Oh, yes. Let's go. And it's really more of a probably a panic response than it is anything else. Mm-hmm. They're really now at a point where, okay, this is the growth that you bought this for is now probably starting to to come, maybe a little bit slower than perhaps we saw the recovery, but there's still some growth to go. Mm-hmm. And they're not necessarily not even interested. Right. They're just going, I'm just happy to be out of this situation.
Yeah.
Because a lot of them were tied down fairly substantially for a while there. If that was one, you know, if they had one or two investment properties, they were locked in because of the situation with the decline in property prices. I mean, we did see people that were losing in areas where, I mean, we're selling houses for 400,000 to 500,000, mm-hmm. less in some cases, where people lost 100,000, $150,000, which is as a percentage is thumping big.
So are the investors, the mum and dad investors that you're dealing with now then, are they first-time investors, and are they more cautious on when they're making their offers than the East Coast?
There is it's a bit of a mix, really. Yeah. The locals probably are less eager. Mm-hmm. I think the buyers from the East Coast, many of them have missed out a couple of times and are going, I just want to lock something in now for two reasons. Firstly, I'm sick of paying property managers to go and look at properties for me, or I'm sick of having to be on realestate.com all the time. And it's also our market operates in a slightly different way from what they're used to. Mm-hmm. And they sometimes take a little while to maybe adjust to the fact that, you know, you send an offer through, it doesn't mean it's going to get written up and presented immediately.
Right.
It might take it, you know, we tell people it'll be, you know, Tuesday before we present offers because we're trying to collate them from the weekend or whatever the situation might be. But they, I think they're a little bit more eager to just make something happen.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps they just operate on a faster kind of pace than the average West Australian buyer. But, to answer your question about mum and dad investors, there's a few more starting to appear around the place. I think if they're local though, what I'm noticing is it's probably a second or third property that they're purchasing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's what we've seen too, Mark. Those the locals that are looking for investors, they're seasoned investors.
Yeah.
They're looking for number 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever, as opposed to the newbies. And a lot of the newbies, the young crew, affordability has shifted, obviously, with interest rates and so forth. So that's been a big game changer for them, but where they can actually do it or not.
Mm-hmm. And the second or third ones have a little bit more equity in those properties that they have purchased previously, and now they're able to, you know, fund them into a couple more. So,
Are you still seeing groups of 40 plus through home
events? Yeah. So just on the weekend, I had one property that had 40 individually booked to go through that went online on Wednesday. By Saturday, we had 40 individual groups booked, and we had 13 offers on that property.
Are you still seeing numbers like that in your area?
Yeah, some. Quite a few actually we've seen, like big numbers like that through properties. Yeah, your 20s, your 30s, your 40s, ending up with, you know, two multiple offers most times.
Mm-hmm.
The good, you know, dare I say it, auctions, you know, where we had an auction the other week in Doubleview, 1960s, 70, early 70s home, nicely maintained and so forth. But yeah, that had a lot of people through it on the day. You know, there was, I think it was about five or six registered, maybe more bidders on the day, but three people had a real good crack at it.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, you just that market, you know, is still really hectic.
You're excited, Roscoe.
Well, and also what I am seeing, which I don't know if I like or not, is certainly with some of the we've seen it. I know other companies are the same. You know, with some of the higher end stuff, off market stuff.
Mm.
I'm not sure I'm a big fan of off market.
No,
but it's certainly a play at the moment. There's no question. Yeah,
something
that we always crops up, isn't it? People have strong opinions.
Yeah, and more so at the moment, I think where a lot of people jump in, and it's a bit of a twisted irony because people jump in, they want to buy something off market for one reason, they want to avoid competition.
Mm.
Yet the reality is, if you want to take that property out of the market, not to go to the market, you have to pay a premium.
Mm. Yeah.
So it's, I'm not sure how well it actually works at the end of the day.
But it's also, you know, in my opinion, it leaves that big question of did we really get to where it was going to go if we'd just gone to market?
And markets, like, and that's what, you know, I know I've banged on about auctions for years and I'll bang on about auctions.
Bang away. You've got the golden gavel. Hit it hard, mate.
But that's what does frustrate me. You know, people say, you know, I talk about it all the time. People say, oh, you know, sellers don't want it. It's not sellers. Mm. Sellers will listen to what we're passionate about. Mm. You know, and as an industry in Western Australia, it just frustrates me. And like you take, to your point, Mark, you know, do we get the best possible result?
Mm.
Like, I look at that auction we had in Doubleview the other week. And I know three people were there fighting it out. And I could put my hand on my heart and look any sell in the eye and say, I know we got absolute every cent in the market we'd pay for that property and more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because you've got three people standing there. You know, it's completely transparent.
Yeah.
There's no, like, the frustration with buyers at the moment when there's multiple offers and they go, what's the other offer? And the agent, well, I can't tell you.
Yeah.
Well, am I $1,000 away? Am I $100,000, there's that whole, there's still that sort of question of.
It is a big challenge.
Where am I at? Whereas the thing with an auction, and in this market in particular, I've got people standing there and that question is never asked because there it is. It's so transparent and it just, and it makes, like I know as a person that's, you know, such an auction advocate, I guess, because of my career around it, but, you know, it makes you feel good because you know you've got the best result because ultimately our client is the seller and I know we've got them the best result. But equally, this the buyer also, like take that auction, the buyer, yeah, they paid more they wanted to pay, but they know the underbidder was $1,000 behind them.
Yeah.
So it helps them go, you know, we paid more, but we know the market was only $1,000 behind us. So they feel okay with where they went.
Mm.
And I just think that's so important.
Yeah. And it's interesting, that point you mentioned before, coming back to the off market and, you know, sellers like, oh, you know, it's easy for them. It's they don't have to put it to market. You know, they don't have to go through the home open thing. Mm. I mean, I think if you said to most families, so for $5,000, I need you to clean your house, go out for an hour and a half and make sure that the yard's been tidied up and the lawn's been mowed and it's worth $5,000 to you because you went to market or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
If that pulls an extra 5, 10, 20, whatever out of the market.
Yeah.
Then I'm pretty sure that they do want to do it.
Yeah.
I think it's really like we've hit a point as an industry where there is a real potential for laziness to creep in and for it to maybe not be noticed.
Yeah.
And as an agent, you can wrap it up before the weekend. You go, oh, fantastic. If I can knock that off before the weekend, that saves me a whole lot of hassle. And so you've got agents who are going, let's do it off market. I've got a buyer. And you go, you didn't even expose that to the market for a couple of days.
Yeah.
And it's a... And there are times where off-market is perhaps appropriate. Say, for example, you've got a really, you know, difficult situation around a tenancy or whatever it might be. There's times where that might be appropriate and that's okay. But I think to use it for it to happen as often as it does, I think is probably not helpful.
Yeah.
And having a full campaign like an auction, how long are your auction campaigns? Is it a four-week campaign still?
No, that was on the third Saturday.
Okay.
Yeah.
In saying that, obviously it's not for everyone. We were talking before about the offers you're getting, you know, a lot of the time it's coming down to the percentage of LVR, right?
Yeah.
So that in that case, if, you know, there's restrictions around who can buy auction, correct?
Well, so yes
and
no.
In some of those cases, are you missing out on potential buyers in certain markets because they can't meet those requirements?
It depends. Like there's a lot of vehicles out there now to help people prepare to be able to bid at auction.
Right.
You know, it used to be, oh, unless you've got cash in the bank, you can't bid. Well, it's not the case.
Okay.
You know, you can get sort of a lot of work done with a good broker to get you in a position to say, I know I can go up
into
to X dollar.
Point.
Yeah.
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 Okay. Beautiful.
Yeah.
I've got one final question for you guys on investment.
And it's over already?
It's nearly over,
wow.
Yeah.
Can't we keep going? This is quite...
Well, I know, it's great, isn't it? I might get you two back again.
Yeah, better than Beaumont.
I'm not, again, there's no one better, Ross. It's just different. but Mark's in strong contention to be a second, maybe a third extra panel.
I think he should be.
Co-host.
I could be a sub. How good. A substitute.
Yeah, I love
fantastic.
Substitutes get paid more than
permanent. Paid? Where do I send the invoice?
final question. This one might be more for you, Roscoe. I'm not sure. Long-term tenants versus Airbnb. How are you? Are you seeing many people, investors, buying for Airbnb?
Okay, good point. Airbnb is an issue.
Yeah,
and it's part of the reason we've got such a an issue in the rental market. The amount of properties that would traditionally be in the rental market are going to the Airbnb pool. Now, I know that's up here, it's down south, et cetera. So it's a thing. But, you know, the thing about Airbnb, you know the old saying, Jess, all that glitters is not gold.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Airbnb, the fees to run it are extremely high.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes when you actually, then you put into some place some vacancy rates and stuff, the net effect at the end of the year, sometimes I go, is it really worth it?
Yeah.
And given you've got to, you know, fully furnish the house and all the bits and pieces you've got to do.
You've got to drop off your freshly baked bread in the morning.
There's lots of bits to it.
Or the linen. But
Yeah. It's definitely caused part of the issue. But it's funny because I recently was looking at buying an investment property. And we did the whole maths over Airbnb versus just putting it onto the rental market. And my wife's been, she's an accountant, so she pretty forensic around that space. And we made a decision, if we bought, we didn't end up buying that particular property, but if we had have, we would have put into the normal rental market as opposed to the Airbnb market.
Is there much activity in that? So I would imagine around... You guys sell coastal, you sell kind of some hot
spots. Yeah, there is. People say to us all the time, why don't you set up a service to deal with holiday let effectively, Airbnb? And I go,
too hard.
But you look at a lot of areas, like you look down south, like Dunsham and so forth, there's a lot of Airbnbs. The city of Busselton have tightened it up to get the registration, if you like, to be able to holiday let it now through Airbnb and so forth. It's become like the golden ticket. A lot of strata, a lot of areas are really tightening up on it. It's going to become more of a thing. Like you look at over in Europe, for example, you look at Barcelona and some of those places, it's illegal to Airbnb. They actually have Airbnb police, even though it's still there because the place is so big. They're really tightening down on it because what's happened is, look, some of the older city, I know it's off point to the actual question, Jess, but it's an interesting fact. Like you look at Venice and those places, they're old cities and they've got old infrastructure. They can cut only a certain amount of people. But what's happened is, like if you've been to Europe or you go to Venice or some of these places, they're horrible now because what's happened is the amount of people that can stay, let's say they've got hotels and they'd say, well, we've got 2,000 hotel rooms available a night. The infrastructure can cope with that. We can control it. Everything's good. They don't know that 2,000 might have increased to 10,000 rooms available a night.
Yeah.
And the places can't cope and they're just crumbling because of the volume of people and things like Airbnb have really had an adverse impact on a lot of these things. And I think over time we're going to see more and more councils really tighten up on the registration to be able to, in a normal suburban area, to be able to Airbnb. That will come.
Is it something you're coming across much more?
Yes and no. I mean, it's one of those conversations that people have, but the number of people who I think actually follow through is relatively low. Depending on the area, I occasionally will jump on Airbnb just to see what's around and see what sort of prices are being achieved. And the number of quality ones is very low. Mm-hmm. There's some really nice ones available locally. A lot more of it would probably be more like ScareBnB because it's pretty nasty locations. And you go, this is somebody who probably was struggling to get a halfway decent tenant and they'll rely on a sucker basically and you know one review was just so scathing. I mean this guy had done whoever owned it had painted the bath as part of a basic renovation. You know, you get the tile paint, same kind of idea, but it had flaked off when this person's kids were in the bath and they'd got the paint stuck to them as they got out of the water. So like they came out looking like an art project. And you know, this is the sort of stuff that you go, this is where it's so, I mean, in a tenancy situation, there's rules.
Yeah.
Whereas in that, what are they going to do? They give this guy a one-star review. That's about it.
Yeah.
And he can start up and do something somewhere else. So it's not a huge thing where we are. There's actually a need for it. There is City of Armidale. And I hope you're listening, City of Armidale, was quite average for a long time regarding accommodation, especially anything in terms of short stay stuff. So there was very little available. And there's still reasons for people to be in our region and to need to be there for a weekend or a couple of weeks or whatever. Mm-hmm. And there were no options really for them. So the Airbnbs that are out there that are nice do really well and have some really good reviews.
Yeah, I imagine there's some beautiful.
Oh, there's some tremendous hill kind of properties. That's right. And even people coming into Perth with their horses as well. Like, you can't keep those in Subiaco. Yeah. So there's, you know, people that have got other needs to be up in Perth. Yeah. We've got the rowing facility at Champion Lakes, and that does bring schools from all around
they
the place.
Had national champs there.
They
last
did.
Week.
Yeah, that's right. And there's not much accommodation nearby. No. And that's a failing of the city of Armidale that I hope they'll address at some point in the future.
So that's three times you mentioned the city of Armidale, mate. Look, sit down. Yeah.
We'll send it through.
Yeah. I don't know if they're up with
see
podcasting
if they make it
yet
to the
down
end.
There.
They need to be.
beautiful, guys. That's it for us today. I appreciate your contributions.
Cue the theme music, I suppose.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is.
Oh, really? I think that was I think that was the other one.
Be the Rocky theme. This guy, Rocky.
Thank you very much.
Thanks,
thank you.